Good morning and welcome to the first Fires and Company in March. We'll have Police Chief Jim Getz in the studios. We have tickets to give away for not only the Illini, but also Kirkland Fine Arts Center. Company starts now.
Fires and Company, WSOY, 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Good morning and welcome. It was a busy weekend. We'll get more on the presidential politics as we get into this hour a little bit later. We also have started our local officials, right? We had one of our county clerk, circuit clerk candidates on last week. We'll have all of them on before the primary on the 17th. I don't know what the primary on the 17th is going to look like as far as the presidential race is concerned. I don't even know if it will matter by then. We'll see. Tomorrow's Super Tuesday. About a third of the delegates that are up for grabs will be given out tomorrow. It'll be the first time Mike Bloomberg's actually on a ballot where people can vote for him. A lot of ifs and X factors. We'll talk about that tomorrow morning. And also Sheriff Tony Brown will be with us as well. Police Chief Jim Getz is in the studios. I want to start today. Well, first of all, good morning and welcome. It's good to see you.
Good morning.
I want to know on social media, I know in everything in life there's got to be two sides now. I mean, there's got to be a fight about everything. I'd like to know the side that's arguing for more impaired drivers. I would really like to know when that became a thing in our life that we have people who want people to drive under the influence of whatever it might be. And put all of the rest of us in danger. When did that become a thing?
I don't know. And then not only that, but then no consequence behind it. I mean, it's crazy. You know, State's Attorney Scott put out the press release last week on the no refusal. And
all right, let's talk about this specifically because we're talking about Class 2 felony, you know, repeat offenders. Mm-hmm. What does this mean? Because I saw this came out with you and Sheriff Brown and Jay Scott, the Maine County State's Attorney. Effective immediately, all of those agencies are implementing a no refusal program for driving under the influence arrest. Under this program, search warrants will be sought to authorize blood draws from drivers arrested for DUI who refuse to submit to a breath test or to provide a blood sample voluntarily. Decatur police officers and Maine County deputies who are trained for will collect samples, which then will be forensically analyzed for alcohol or cannibal levels or the presence of controlled substances, meaning anything else. What is different about this, and why is there opposition to this?
Okay, so there's not a lot of difference with this. We've done this on a limited basis at times where we have these safety checkpoints set up. We'll do the no refusals. So basically, no refusals target the worst offenders. Our offenders that have been, I think it's three or four time offenders. They've been involved in a DUI that caused a major accident or a death. And so that's what we're focusing on. And there's very few of those that we come across. But when you do come across them, if they refuse, that makes your case tougher to build. But we want these guys off the street. And so the judges and the state's attorney and the sheriff's office and myself have agreed to do no refusal to target when we stop those folks. And they're at that Class 2 felony or level or higher. We're going to do the no refusal, get the search warrant, and do the blood.
Yeah, and I see this every day. Someone will be on Facebook screaming up a storm. You do a cursory search of their name, and they got four DUIs. It's like you aren't even allowed to be in this conversation because clearly you can't have the discipline to not drive impaired and put people's lives in jeopardy.
That's exactly right. I mean, you've been stopped once, and you've got a DUI. Move on with your life, fix it. But these are four-time offenders and five-time offenders. These people need to be taken off the streets, and they can't drive, and we need to be able to get their blood and prove the case against them and get them off the streets from driving.
Now, I'm sure that I would not enjoy being pulled over if I hadn't done anything wrong, and they said, no, you're going to have to do a blood test. But I know at the end of the day, if I haven't done anything wrong, it's not going to matter.
That's exactly right. So if you're out there driving illegally, I mean, those are people, the only ones upset about it, the ones that are out there doing it and causing you know, making the streets unsafe. So it really falls back on them.
Now, Nick doesn't consume anything, not even caffeine, which is ironic with his role with Marquis. But do you understand this social media argument? I mean, who is for impaired driving?
You know, I like to play the other side a lot. In this particular one, I have a tough time. I mean, the closest thing you could find is some sort of like, you know, protection of your civil liberties. But you've kind of forgone that when you continually break those.
Your civil liberties means you get an attorney. And if mm-hmm. you can't afford an attorney, one will be provided for you. Your civil liberties do not allow you to break the law.
That's
or
correct.
Drive drunk or drive high.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, how can you consciously have an issue with them trying to to police our streets and make it safer for everyone. I assume their biggest concern is some level of discrimination, but whatever it is that you did to get pulled over in the first place is probably not as a result
of discrimination.
You know
what doesn't discriminate? A couple of thousand pounds of metal running into innocent people. And I don't care what color you are, what your background is, how old you are. To me, this is a colorblind blanket issue of you cannot get behind the wheel impaired. And I don't think there's a legitimate argument against it out there. Yet there seems to be people, particularly when this whole thing was brought up about, marijuana and blood. The blood thing isn't a new conversation.
Yes, we've been doing this for years, Brian.
How do you test somebody for meth? You can't make them walk a line or say the alphabet backwards
or do
a breathalyzer.
Nothing's changed. This has been going on for years. The new cannabis law going into effect 2020 brought this out. I got an email late last night from a local media source that wanted to know what the status was of our cannabis enforcement officer. And so I just kindly responded, I don't have a cannabis enforcement officer and never have. I just don't understand why people, especially if you're going to request something like that, educate yourself. This is a DUI, driving under the influence enforcement officer, not a cannabis enforcement officer.
And I would assume that means, anything. I mean, opioids, meth, heroin, crack, whatever it might be.
Anything that impairs your driving is what we're targeting. We're targeting that person that's out there driving unsafe, and if they're driving under the influence, no matter what it is, we're going to take action.
I read a recent study, because I've also seen people argue the fact that somehow being high on marijuana doesn't, impact your driving skills. That is just not true. I mean, you can go to like Harvard, you can go to the New England Journal of Medicine. I mean, you don't have to take law enforcement's perspective. You can go find medical research. In fact, overall, people who smoke more marijuana overall are worse drivers.
Absolutely.
These are medical studies.
That's exactly right. This isn't us, the police, law enforcement doing these studies. This is the medical journals.
Yeah. And alcohol certainly still right there at the forefront as well.
Yeah.
This isn't an either or thing.
Listen, we had, 35, 36 DUIs in the month of January, which that's a typical month for us. And I think four of them were cannabis related.
Okay. So this is not, I don't think, a controversy for most people.
I agree. It's the ones that are out doing the crime that it's the controversy for.
Okay. So the no refusal program is initially here going to be limited to class 2 felony or higher aggravated DUI arrest. What does that mean? How is that implemented just for those folks? I mean, if you pull somebody over, mm-hmm. if they've got a record of this already?
Yeah, absolutely. You're looking at their record, and if they meet that threshold where it's a class 2 felony, now, then that's the ones that will be subject to the no refusal.
Okay. Let's also talk a little bit about and Nick, these numbers are going to blow you away because I feel like I've got a pulse on things. And I looked at this and I'm just like, my God, how can people in 2020, and this is actually last year's stats, but how in the world are you leaving your car and your house unlocked? I know there's been a spate of sort of West End stuff. That neighborhood is, to their great credit, been sort of reclaimed by these young families. And you look at Dennis School and all that. But in 2019, of motor vehicle burglaries, 355, 86% unlocked vehicles.
Absolutely. We preach this. We teach this. We've put it out as education through the media. But Brian, believe it or not, Decatur's not the only one doing this. When you look at national stats, they are so high for not only residential but motor vehicle burglaries that just leave your stuff unlocked.
That's just crazy to me, right? I mean, if you're just sitting there with an unlocked car with stuff in it that people can see, and not to say that you deserve to be a victim of a crime, but you have to have some common sense. I mean, Nick, you lock your car, right?
All the time. And, the thing, Brian, is a lot of these people are not looking to smash somebody's window, and they're not
looking. They don't want to make the noise. If they can just get a quick grab and run.
You go to a parking lot and you have 20 choices. If three or four of them are unlocked, that does the job in under a couple minutes, and nobody would know.
Listen, we got video, of these people walking down the street, and they're just pulling on the door handle, go to the next car, pull on the door handle, And when they find one that's unlocked, that's the one they go into. So, you know, a lot of people's thought is, well, I want to leave it unlocked because I don't want to break my window. But the facts show that they're looking for that easy escape and easy target.
All right. So I would start then, right, with that message. No one deserves to have their stuff stolen. I'm not making the victim
lock your car. Yeah, help us out. Help yourself out. Just lock your vehicles. Lock your house up.
So 83% unlocked in 2017. 81% unlocked in 2018. 2019, 86% of the motor vehicle burglaries involved unlocked cars. That's a staggering number.
It's surprising to me. When I look at that, I'm like, it's unbelievable.
All right. And even, I think, more surprising, even though the numbers are lower, are residential burglaries. 254 residential burglaries in the year of 2019 in the city of Decatur. 39% involved unlocked homes?
That's such a shocker. You know, when I was growing up, I think everybody probably left their house unlocked, and if you lived in the country, you definitely did. But things have changed, and people are still, regardless of the message and the education putting out, are leaving windows unlocked, doors open. It's surprising. That's a place you should feel safe in, and that's where, I mean, your life is at. And so, you know, secure your house and keep those people out that you don't want in.
All right, so that was 3 years ago, 34% in 18, 39% in 19. Now, those numbers are down, 428, 340, 254, so clearly we're doing a better job of curbing this sort of behavior.
Absolutely, and a lot of times, you know, you look at 2017 where those numbers were higher, you probably had a group or a couple groups going around and they were committing a high percentage, and through investigations, those people have been taken off of the streets. And so usually that's what it is. Even your burglars on the West End, it's a lot of it is juvenile kids running around late at night with no supervision, and they're going through these cars. And the problem with that is we identify them, we arrest them. They're back out on the street the next day or 2 days later, and they're doing the same thing again. So the neighborhood watch programs that they're starting on the West End, and those groups help out. The bottom line is legislation helps the juveniles to continue to do what they're doing.
And well, you guys got to do what you got to do, and that's the way the system works.
We'll continue to arrest them and build cases on them, and then it's up to the courts and legislation after that.
I also think that the opioid crisis, whatever drug you might be talking about, also plays a huge role in these vehicle burglaries and these residential burglaries. And you know, we talked to folks at the Crossing campus and the community care campus, you know, like what, two or three or four or five people getting straight and getting back on their lives, the dramatic impact it can have on crime rates in a community this size.
It makes a big difference. If you got five people out in your downtown area that are burglarizing cars or breaking into businesses and they stop doing that, that's a big deal.
And then also just the common sense of like how much it costs to incarcerate someone versus getting their lives turned around. And you guys have seen this. Law enforcement really has changed, I think, their views by large, maybe when you started your career to now, to realizing that just jail, for drug addiction, you know, yes, there are crimes committed and people have to answer for those crimes, but just the recidivism rate of just sending people back and sending people back, this is going to make a difference.
Yeah, just locking them up over and over again is not doing us any good. So we have to have other options. And the center that the Buffett Foundation provided is doing that. And matter of fact, I'm looking at an agreement with Tanya Andrix over there now to send some of our people that we deal with over there to get some help as well.
It just makes sense in the long run.
It does.
And I know not everybody in law enforcement is going to come around to that point of view, and it's not. Some people, you know, think one thing, but I tell you, it's impacted families. And I know at least one law enforcement officer that told me he felt one way about drug, you know, addiction his whole career. It impacted his family, and now he has a completely, you know, opposite view.
It does. When it hits close to home, you see it a different way.
At the same time, you guys are tasked to enforce the laws and to keep the streets safe. How many illegal guns taken off the streets in 2019?
2019, we had almost 200, 196 illegal guns, and that's a drop in the bucket. It's more than we've got in the past, usually around 140 or 150 a year. And so the officers did a great job of getting those illegal guns off the street. And so after that is getting these people sentenced to harsher sentences because those are our problems. You know, when you talk about the shootings, which we've talked about in the past, it's these guns that are on the street that are doing that. And so one is, where are the illegal guns coming from? So we're working on that. But also we know who the shooters are, and we're targeting them as well.
Chief, we appreciate all the hard work.
All right, thanks,
Brian.
Have a good
one. Jim Getz, Chief of Police for the Decatur Police Department.